There's a lot to do, so let's do it. Okay, we can start Shabbat Tzvi finally at long last. I thought I'd get here a lot earlier, but we're finally here. Okay. Yeah, I think, in my opinion, I'm not 100% sure about this. Is my opinion, but I think it's pretty sure about it. I think Shabbat Tzvi is the most important tragic episode in Jewish history. At least since Gerush Sfar. At least since the expulsion of Jews from Spain. I'm putting down Tachmatan. I'm not sure what else I would have to put down, but it's a major, major watershed event. One of the very fundamental concepts we always have to understand. So we have to know who we are and where we are. So I know where we are. We're lacking the perspective, scope, depth, penetration of Chazal, and certainly the Rishonim, and even the Achronim. You know, Moshe Feinstein called our cool backwards and forwards. We're close to that. But still, it seems to me. The Shabbat Tzvi is an event of, you know, Yeruvim ben Nevat proportions. The effects of Shabbat Tzvi are so severe that we're kiyuh suffering from Ari Yomazah. It's not, as it says in Kehelis, Al Tamash Rishon, Hayom Rishonim Hayotov Me'ela. Don't say the early days were better than these days. That's not a wise question to say. So we can't reminisce and be nostalgic for the situation beforehand. Of course, whatever. But we are where we are, and we have to do the best where we are. But I think it's a very epic event, which as we go on, we'll see. Okay. Now, for better or for worse, standard practice and yeshivisha/ very religious circles is to more or less ignore the entire story of Shabbat Tzvi, sweep it under the carpet, not talk about it too much. Art Scrolls Early Achronim gives it almost nothing at all about it. I mean, you could technically argue that they didn't have to, but I don't know if I agree with that. Because it was just a major, major event. Just wait a second. In case we're not aware, the main researcher of Shabbat Tzvi is Gershon Scholl. This is the Bible of Shabbat Tzvi. This is just about Shabbat Tzvi.
Didn't you say anyone who wrote?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I said everyone who's written on it since then is so influenced by Gershon Scholl. There's like absolutely nothing to talk about at all. I find it impossible to believe. You can ask Rabbi Ross. I find it impossible to believe that anyone who wanted to learn anything practical about Shabbat Tzvi did not read Gershon Scholl. It's not possible not to read it. It's not the prime source. You understand? There are prime sources. There's a sefer by Rabbi Akiva Sforza's Novel Tiferes, Novel Tzitzat Tzvi. And there's the sefer by something Francis, Emmanuel Francis, called Tzvi Mudach. There are primary sources out there, but again, I'm not even sure how many professors of Kabbalah bothered going through all those significantly, seriously, in depth on their own, keel trying to forget about Gershon Scholl's ideas. Anyway, the body of what's done is based on Gershon Scholl. Now, it's important to understand this is another permutation or facet of the concept. You know, everyone's opinionated about it, and everyone's opinionated about Jews, and Jews are the most opinionated about Jews. Right? Everyone's opinion. Jews are very opinionated about Jews. And though, of course, maintaining Western academic tradition, Gershon Scholem deigns to be an objective observer. He definitely claims he's objective. He's definitely not objective.
How so?
Okay. Now we're not. No one's going to doubt that Gershon Scholem is a very knowledgeable person. I myself personally don't know enough Kabbalah to know how well he really understood Kabbalah or not. Just based on the basis on the nature of the material, I find it almost impossible to believe he really understood it, even though he certainly could spew a vast amount of Kabbalistic knowledge at you, Ki'ilu. It sound like he understands what he's talking about. I'm confident he really doesn't, because the bottom line is, as we know, there is a very deep relationship between Torah Shabbat, between Nigla and Nistar, between revealed Torah and hidden Torah. And if you don't understand revealed Torah, then you can't understand the hidden Torah. Sort of like, one of the examples I've given, I don't know if I gave this recently here about this, is the body of the sitter. You know, the Sidur Tefillah, the body of the sitter. How old is it?
Ezra,
okay. So we know Chazal say the Anshei Knesset Gedolah wrote the sitter. Kiel wrote. It's a good question exactly what they wrote. It is a legitimate question. The body, the first Sidurim printed, written down, are from 1300 years ago. There's no Sidurim written down before. I mean, obviously you understand the Sidurim were written down to be used. So you're not going to find this. Obviously, most of them were used until they were put in Knesset back before the day of print. You use something until it was worn out, and you got rid of it, and you put it in Knesset. So it's not. So, you know, a technical cynic, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone say this, but a technical cynic could claim that this and that and the next was invented here, there, and the next. The body of the sitter, like the outline of the sitter, is referred to additionally.
In what?
The Mishnah is referred to the basic structure of the Siddur. The exact details, no, they don't say almost anything. They say there's little sugyas here and there which comment on the details. For example, what is the content of Birkas Yotzer in the morning? What is the content at night? What's the content of this? There's little things here and there, but not that much. Not enough to really construct a Siddur. So it's a similar thing. In other words, but the Siddur is like, it's assumed. As a matter of fact, the way to really understand it is in the Mishnah, Siddur is an assumed document that everyone's aware of. You don't have to write down because everyone knows what it is anyway. And it's referenced as an assumed document that every Jew knows. So it's in terms of Nigla and Nistar, it's because Nistar is Nistar, because hidden Torah is hidden Torah. It's assuming, given, you know, the revealed Torah, and the references are not always fully there. So if someone doesn't know Nigma, then it's obvious, at least to me, that they can't really understand this. Now, I actually started preparing this last year. And I actually asked Rabbi Meir about this, and he's promising me that it wasn't him. So that means it has to be Rav Benny. I think I told you, I dangled this story in front of you guys last week.
What story?
So I told Rav Benny, apparently, I mean, you'll hear the story, you'll figure out why it has to be him. I told Rav Benny that I'm, you know, working on Shabbat Tzvi, and I'm reading Gershon Scholem. So, Gershon Scholem. So, Tzvi Yehuda was there. He was once out of Bris, and Gershon Scholem was there. He refused to look at him and didn't shake his hand either.
Rav Benny refused to look at Gershon Scholem?
Rav Benny told me that Gershon Scholem was out of Bris, the Brit Milah, and Rav Tzvi Kook was there, and Gershon Scholem was there. Gershon Scholem, after all, was a professor of Kabbalah at Hebrew University, and Rav Tzvi Kook held he was a Rasha, who you don't look at, you don't shake his hand. Because, to quote Rabbi David, he's definitely a kofer.
What does that mean?
What? Well, I think I'm being pretty clear here, guys. I'm even saying this. You believe I'm saying this on the record?
No, you understand what, like, the basis is, like, why is he a kofer? Like,
why? Because he absolutely, without question, denies the authenticity of Torah Shabbat.
He does?
Without question?
question.
Without
question. So he doesn't keep.
He literally says,
I'm not even sure if he. Did he keep Shabbos? I have no idea. It doesn't make a difference. You're looking at the wrong. You guys are being. You're being technical, and you're looking at the wrong side of the coin. He didn't. He, without question, denies the authenticity of Torah Shabbat.
Was he raised like that?
He was knowledgeable enough. See, the issue with a person like he actually is of German descent, and I don't know if he was if he grew up Orthodox or not. But he was knowledgeable enough that, again, I just quoted you, Rabbi David, and Zvi Cook, in order to substantiate what I'm saying. I'm not taking my Zvi Cook. That he was a knowledgeable enough person that once a person is that knowledgeable, then you can no longer they can no longer blame it on lack of knowledge, background, etc., etc., etc.
Is he a carrot?
Is he a carrot?
Carrot.
A carrot. No, he's not a carrot. He's a muscle. Kilo. I'm not kilo. He was a proper muscle. I mean, I don't. You know what I mean? He really knew enough to call him a muscle. And I, unlike most, there's almost maybe three people alive today who I would call a muscle. Maybe, and I'm not even sure if I'd give him that honor. But Gerich Hashem, yes, we'll give him. Haskalah, Jewish intellectuals, Jewish enlightenment. So he we'll give him the title of being a Moscow, because I think that's an accurate that could be said. I think he knew enough to be called a Moscow. Okay. Yeah, so again, I mean, Romero told me that he didn't tell me the story, so therefore I deduce it must be Rav Benny, because I don't know anyone else who could tell me such a story about Rav Cook. It wasn't Rabbi David. Rabbi David knew Rav Cook a little bit, and I heard it from one of those two. Okay, fine. Now, there's no. I have noted.
Did Rivera like the story?
What?
Did Rivera like the story?
Yeah, he thought it was a cute story. I have noted, and I mentioned this last week, that Kershon Shalom has a real axe to grind with Rabbi Yaakov Sosfortas.
Who's he?
Rabbi Yaakov Sosfortas was a rabbi living in Amsterdam, Hamburg in Amsterdam, during this period of time, who was the greatest public opponent of Shabtai Tzvi. He was the greatest public opponent of Shabtai Tzvi. I personally don't think it's a coincidence that, again, Gershon Shalom is, anti-authentic Torah Shebaal Peh, and when we get farther in, we'll discuss some of the issues with Rav Yaakov Sosfortas, but he's illogical. He moves beyond logic in terms of refusing to accept information from Rav Yaakov Sosfortas. Some of it I hear. Some of it is fascinating, difficult question, which I'm not sure. I hope I'll be able to speak to other people about it before I present it. But either way, there's many places where Gershon Shalom just goes beyond the scope of normalcy. And he has a real axe to grind with Yaakov Sosfortas, and I don't think there's much of a question that the reason is that, you know, he's just anti-rabbinic. He didn't like the rabbis who lived in his day, so he transfers that dislike to Rabbi Yaakov Sosfortas.
Did he not say about them that Rabbi Yaakov
Sosfortas? Sosfortas.
Sosfortas. He would say things without context and use them.
Yes, I did say that. Yes, I said that. I said that. He accuses Rabbi Yaakov Sosfortas of deleting certain material in order to shape the picture, and I accused whatever. He could be accused of it himself in a number of places, in Dobkin specifically with Rabbi Yaakov Sosfortas. Okay. Now I have another. I couldn't refine this, but I'm really sure I saw it. I unfortunately didn't mark it off properly in my book, clear enough to refine it, but. Another result of Gershon Shalom not ever having been exposed in a real fashion to real learning, and he really wasn't, is that he's viewing Torah as a cadaver on a dissecting table. That's what he's. That's how he. That's his view of Torah, as a dead body that he's dissecting. That's how he looks at Torah. Torah is alive. Ki hem chayenu va'orach yameinu. Torah is a live body.
Is he still alive?
No. Gershom died around 1980. Maybe the late 70s. I'm pretty sure around, I think, 80s, right? Torah is alive. The process is alive. And when you are able, I mean, that's one of the key points in learning, is to bring it to life, not just in terms of practical applications, but making the sugya really alive. If you make the sugya really alive, that's when it affects you, and that's not now. Rabbi Eisenstein spoke about that a little Thursday night. You ever heard the Shmuz Thursday night? He spoke about that a little. But one of the other fashions, results of Gershon Sholem being out of touch with Torah is he doesn't view Torah as a live body of knowledge. He views it as a cadaver to dissect. And Rebbe Ber, you know who Rebbe Ber was? Oh, Michael. Rebbe Ber? Rebbe Ber! He didn't get quoted yet this year? Berkat Shmuel? No, okay, not because I guess he doesn't get quoted. But in other messages we get quoted, and Rabbi Rachman probably screamed out of a laugh. Okay, Rebbe Ber was Rebbe Ber was probably Rebbe's top Talmud. Probably. I know Briskers don't always completely agree with that, but Rebbe Ber was definitely one of Rebbe Chaim's closest Talmud. So, Rebbe Ber had a friend who quotes, went off to the Arab, as they say, and was a professor of Talmud and wherever. And as Rebbe Ber quit, he knows where Abaye and Rabbi, he knows where they died, and he's discovered that. I know where Abaye and Rabbi live. So that's a very important point. And then we'll go on now to the next issue. You'll see why I'm making that point. Okay. Okay, we have two more introductory issues. Until we get to the body of the till we actually can talk about Shabtai Tzvi. One of them is Mashiach. The concept, the messianic concept in the Jewish religion. That's very, a very, very important issue to understand. Every time, everywhere. Gotta get another small Tanakh to put in this room. Okay. Yeah, whatever. Okay. The messianic idea in the Jewish religion. What is it? How important is it? How much of a role does it play in the religion? Yeah, we understand Shabtai Tzvi is a false messiah, so it's misuse of the messianic concept. But the concept's there. So, again, if you're not really in touch with the religion, then you can accuse the Arizal, and we'll get there a little later also, of reforming and reshaping the way people look at it. I don't think so. It's a constant. The idea of Mashiach is a constant. It's true that in Torah, it's referred to very briefly, mainly in Sefer Dvarim. But the idea is a constant in Tanakh. I mean, of course, Nevi'im Rishonim, as Nevi'im Rishonim are mainly story, and not, Nevi'im Rishonim are mainly story, and not prophecy, there's only references here and there. Shir Tana has something about it, Shir Stavim, but Nevi'im Achronim, it's a hot topic. And all the Nevi'im Achronim, of course, the ones which speak about the most are Yishaya and Hezekiel. They speak about it the most. But it is a constant theme in Tehillim. I don't know if I have my Tehillim. I don't think I have my Tehillim guide on me. I actually want to reprint one soon. But maybe I do have it on me. I don't think I do, actually. Whatever. But it's a constant theme over and over in Tehillim. Of course, from Mikra, from Pesukim, from Tanakh, it was not that clear of an idea. The idea is there. Exactly what it is not so clear. There's a lot of questions. But it's an idea which is clear in Tanakh, and explain more about Chazal. I mean, of course, as the Rambam says, maybe we do have a Rambam here. How do you even have the right Rambam here? What do you know? As the Rambam says, and then there's something more. Parak Yud Beis Halacha Beis. Amruch Chacham Hei Bein Olam Azel Emes Mashiach Hashim Machas Tovad. We are going to be Shalti Bein Nevi Hashim Tchir Asim Asim Mashiach Tiyah Mechamas Gal Gomor Gag Shukal Mechamas Gal Gomor Gag Yaman Davi Liyashu Yisrael Hachim Ribon. I should translate this for you guys. Okay. It would appear from reading Tanakh that first there will be Mechamas Gal Gomor Gag, and before that a Navi will come. Shnemer Hinei Anoch Yishalech HaMasariyah Navi Vein Abayel Enabal Otam Otar, etc., etc. Baba Rosam Shalom Ba'olam Shnemar, Ve'eshi Vrivaz Obadim, Aliyanov is going to come to bring us back in Shuva. Ve'esh Bina Chacham Sh'avim Shikonabis Mashiach Yavalio. Some people say before, some people will say after. V'chol Yadvar Chiyotva, Uro Yedo Adam Ech Yiyah Achi Yiyah. All these things, we will not know how they happen until they happen. That's the famous Rambam. Perek Yud Beis Hilchot Melachim Melachim Beis. When I was your age, it was a popular hot topic. Whatever, not now. It was a popular hot topic. Okay. So the point is that ideas of Mashiach are very central ideas. It's a very central idea in Yiddishkeit. Even though it's not the order and how things are going to happen is not so clear, as the Rambam says explicitly, but the idea is a very central idea. We know how can we prove how the centrality of the idea? We can prove the centrality of the idea by the fact that Rambam says it's one of the Yud Gimel Iker. It's one of the Yud Gimel Iker. It's one of the 13 principles of Jewish faith, and that's very important. What are Iker? What are Iker? Why are some things Iker and other things aren't Iker? Iker show absolute structure. That's what Iker do. And of course, I mean, that's why I understand the Rambam. I beg Rosh Hashem next year, you say 6:10, we start out with the Rambam and Chelik. Now, when we finish that, we'll worry about what we do afterwards. That's where we start. The Rambam and Chelik, which talks about the Yud Gimel Iker. So that's Beis Rosh Hashem to the next year. But anyway, Rinyanenu, back to this, the Ikrim show structure. So the Rambam says that believe in Mashiach is one of the Ikrim. So that means it's a structural part of the Jewish religion. Now, the point where I couldn't refine this, I think I saw it in Gershon Shalom, but maybe I saw it somewhere else, is someone thinks the Rambam was the accepted approach in what they call eschatology, which means what's going to happen, you know, Yimus Mashiach, end of times. And the Rambam was the accepted approach until the Arizal came, and the Arizal switched everything around. That's just out of touch with Yiddishkeit. The Rambam's approach to to Sof Hayamim is very fascinating. Beis Hashem, next year I'll speak about it. It's complicated, problematic. The Rambam himself knows how complicated it is because when he finishes explaining his approach, he says, listen to this quote from the Rambam. Chazer over what I'm saying many times. Many times. And if you chazer once, or 10 times, or even 10 times, and you think you understand what I'm talking about, God knows you're fooling yourself. Ad kan. That's a direct quote from the Rambam.
Is it presumptuous of him to assume that he knows?
Okay. Michael, you're not so happy with the Rambam's tone. I have heard people. I know most people don't get the Rambam at all. There's a lot of small details. I don't know. I'm not sure if I've been through it 10 times yet, so I am hesitant to say that I really understand it. But I feel I put enough of the Rambam together to sort of figure out what I think the Rambam's doing. But the Rambam's definitely complicated. And there's no... And I have
I'm
no question.
I'm understanding from
Okay. We'll talk to you. I'm not really holding Be'ilim to think that question through. And next year when I say on it, then I'll be able to have something more positive to say about it rather than what I'm doing right now. Now I'm just mentioning it, you know, like we're scooting by the Rambam. And I'm only talking about the Rambam just to tell you that I'm confident the Rambam was not the mainline accepted approach to Sof Hayamim, to the end of days. What was? Okay, that's not now. That's a good question. And, you know, Ezra Hashem, if I say Shira next year, I'll explain that more. But the Rambam is definitely not the mainline approach. The Rambam is definitely not. So it's an absolute inaccuracy, which only someone who is not in touch with real Torah can make such a major error. Okay. Okay. Now, this next part, I'm going to say, even though I'm not sure what I should do about it, but I'm going to say it anyway. It sounds familiar, but that's what I'm going to do. Okay. Gershom Shalom more or less blames the Arizal for Shabtai Tzvi. Why? Okay, there are... Why? Now, again, I don't know the Kabbalistic parts.
Is it like anything true in his book?
Say again?
Anything true in his book?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, the historical research he did a pretty good job on. The historical research did a pretty good job.
Is that book allowed in the base?
There are a lot of books that are there are other books that have been in the base. Let me put it this way: this book is sort of like Making of a Goal. Do you understand what I mean?
It's like what?
Making of a Goal, which means I challenge your average Shana Aleph guy to read it for more than 15 minutes and not put it down. A half hour? I really doubt your average guy could read this for more than a half hour. I mean, that would be pushing it.
Why is this boring?
Because it's a lot of boring, tedious. He goes through the work, and he explains his work. Here, let me give you an example. He has a three-page write-up, 3 pages, on date, the exact date of Shabtai Tzvi's birth.
Is there a purpose to it?
Yeah, the question is, what year exactly was the guy born? That's the question. Okay? But that's typical.
Did that matter in this meeting?
No, it does not. It's not historically significant. It's not. You are right. You know, Michael, that is legitimate criticism. That it doesn't make that much of a difference what year the guy was born in. That does not change the story practically at all, if at all. But to a historian, historians are interested. What's that again? That's right. Historians are interested in historical accuracy, so he spends 3 days on three pages on that. Okay? So that's just an example. I really challenge, it's like Making it without, I challenge your average guy to read it for a half hour and not just, this guy is insane, close the book and put it down. Okay? Is that like, you know, like some books are like too well written? Okay.
On tape?
Yeah, we're on tape now. Okay.
Why does he blame the Ari?
Because there were a lot of messianic whisperings around the Ari. I doubt I'm going to Tzfat this year, so that's personally what it looks like right now, but you never know. There were messianic whisperings. However, this is like called being out of touch with the body of Torah. And the idea that we're in the Ikfasid of Mashiach, the Ari did not admit that. He did not admit that.
The idea of what?
That we are an Ikfasa, Ikfata of the Mashiach. You know what that means? We all know what this means? You will know what that means, yes. Sam.
No, I thought it meant ancient something.
Well, no. Ikfasa, what does Ikfasa mean? Ankle, very good. Ikfas like Ankle.
Anointed?
Ankle. HaMashiach. Ankle. Ikfas of Mashiach, it means ankle Mashiach, literally. And it means the times right before Mashiach comes. Because the ankle's at the end of the human body, right? That means Mashiach is about to come. How long have we been talking about Ikfas of Mashiach before?
2,000 years.
Almost 2,000 years, that's right. Very good. From Shasa,
is it true that Mashiach has to come before the year 6,000?
Is it true that Mashiach has to come before the year 6,000?
That is a myth.
That's not a myth. There is. I don't know. I suppose there's a lot of substantial proof to that. I don't know. It's hard to believe it won't happen well before that. But who knows? It's not our business. We don't have to worry about that stuff.
So where's that from?
The Rambam has some choice.
The Drushim, Kibbutz, and Gemara.
I heard the Gemara.
What's the story about the rabbi who left his watch or something, and like it was like too weird of this story? He died, and he left his watch at a certain time. He said when this watch hit 12 o'clock, she asked him to come, and like the watch was like, and like now like the watch is like 10 to 12 or something like that.
Who knows? I don't know. You're asking questions which I absolutely can't answer. There's a lot of messianic lore, legend around the Baal Shem Tov.
Doesn't the Rambam have some choice words about the people who try to...
Such as the Rambam, Chazal say, Tifa, Pucha, Shabbat
Hashem. Either you're going to lose your knowledge or lose your breath.
What about both?
Okay, let's not worry about that right now. But the point is, as we pointed out, Ikfas of the Meshiva has been going on for a long time. It's mentioned in Shas, it's mentioned in the Rabbah, mentions in Igeres Teman, and says we're in Ikfas of the Meshiva. The Rabban talked about it in his Igeres and his Perish of Chumash, they were in Ikfas of the Meshiva. So the Ari was not being Mechadish, the Ari did not invent the idea that Mashiach is about to come. Okay? Now, there are whisperings around the Ari that the Ari held himself to be Mashiach ben Yosef. Not Mashiach ben Yosef, potentially Mashiach ben Yosef. Okay.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Mashiach ben Yosef versus Mashiach.
Okay. Well, that's Mashiach ben Yosef versus Mashiach ben David. That is a very difficult problem. Why is it a difficult problem?
There's no source.
Because, there are sources. The problem is, in standard, clear places like Shas, there's very little said about it. In Midrashim, in standard Midrashim, there's a little more said about it. Most of what's said about these issues are in the, quotes, interesting Midrashim. Okay? The Rambam, as you may be aware, does not mention Mashiach ben Yosef. And I believe it's a Radbaz, but maybe it's someone else says that because it's only mentioned one place in Shas, and it's not really clear if it's going to happen, the Rambam doesn't hold of the idea of Mashiach ben Yosef.
What is the idea of Mashiach ben Yosef?
Okay, the basic idea, the way I understand it at the present moment, is Mashiach ben Yosef prepares the way for Mashiach ben David.
Okay.
That's all hard. They're all hard questions which cannot be completely answered.
What's the point of dealing with this stuff?
And the issue, as I always say, is at the end of the day, the Rambam says that when it happens, we'll know exactly what happened. Yeah. And if it didn't yet happen, so we're not yet going to know. Josh, you're raising a good point. Today, and you're going to get me slightly off the topic, and I was not sure if I should say this or not, but you clicked, pushed the right button, so now you're going to get me to say it.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the big deal about talking about this? Why do people care? It was a seriously hot topic back in the day. Okay? Yeah, today it's not a hot topic. And I'm going to explain it to you like this. The Mabit, we've heard of the Mabit?
Yes.
Mabit? Anyone heard of the Mabit? Moshe ben Yosef Trani, he was a bar pluk to someone who argued with the Beis Yosef. He lived in Spot at the same time. To remember to get back to that one last point. Okay, there's one last point about Ari and Sfat. Remind me to say it. Okay. The Mabit has a sefer called Beis Elohim. There's a sefer called Beis Elohim. It's about Yugimel Ikram. He is absolutely not a Mukum. I'm sorry. Even though he was lived in Sfat at the time of the Ari, he was definitely not, there's nothing Kabbalistic in the book. Gets you excited, doesn't it, Sam? Okay. One of the questions he deals with, and he deals with it obviously because people were interested, is after we come back in Tchias HaMeisim, what clothes are we going to wear?
Already have the same scars.
It could be he deals with that one also. What is the Nusach HaTfilah going to be? And the reason why he deals with this is because back in the day, and this is what I hold one of the most tragic effects of Shabtai Tzvi was, is before Shabtai Tzvi, this is also an effect of modernity and hypermodernity, and I have two long shiurim about that, which I think I've said both of them here at different times, but I'm just going to condense them down into one little blurb, so open your mouths up, get ready to swallow. Okay, today we review Mashiach coming as mythological as belief. It's something we believe, but we don't relate to it as reality. This is an eraser. Okay, guys?
Don't we usually relate that to reality? Like, Ani-Mani?
Halavai, we should be able to relate to it as a real reality, the way we say this is an eraser. If someone tells you this is not an eraser, what do you tell them? What do you say about the guy? He is crazy. Funny sense of humor. Imbibed in illicit substances to a very extreme amount. Okay, those are the more or less your three basic ideas. Or he has some funny shtickle terror. He's Jewish and he's so argumentative the eraser is not the exact term. It should really be called whatever. Okay, fine. Shkoya.
Using it as an eraser.
But yeah, something like that. Yeah, you know, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Those are your options. But you don't view, if someone says it's not, again, someone, you're not going to be challenged by it. It's something that we relate to that. We relate to this desk as reality. We unfortunately don't relate to Mashiach as reality. We don't. I have a lot of thought and discussion about that, but not for now. Dangle, dangle, dangle. Not for now. If you want, we can talk about it over dinner. And the reason why they were, but the reason was, to answer your question, you want to know why they were so interested in these things then? Because they related to it as a real reality. And that is one of the effects of Shabtai Tzvi. Because of Shabtai Tzvi, the masses of the Jews at large lost the belief in Mashiach as a reality. Okay. Just one last point. The reason why I feel, even though there is certain proofs, ki'ilu, to what Gershon Shalom says about the Ari, at Mamash hold, it's so irreverent, it shouldn't be thought of. And the reason is the Ari, and you want to know, why was the Ari so accepted? That's an interesting question, isn't it, Sam? Why did everyone accept that guy? Okay, so the answer is that the Ari did not live in a vacuum. He lived in Tzfat, in the mid 1500s, between 1570 and 1573, and Sfat in that period of time was star studded. The Beis Yosef, the Mabit, the Radbaz. It's unbelievable. And they all knew who he was, and they say that when the Ari was darshaning, he was saying so. The Radbaz, who was Khan Harabon, the Radbaz, who at the time was in his 90s, and he was a known Marcus Tar for 60 years. The Beis Yosef was only a little younger than the Radbaz, but the Beis Yosef was not famous when he was young. He only became famous as he got older. The Radbaz was a known, he was Rosh Hashiva from the age of 20-something in Egypt. The Radbaz called him in, because you're not supposed to talk about these things publicly. And after that, he spoke to him about it. He said, Sam, you're right, you could speak about it. Is able to see the reason. That's why the Ari. Why is the Ari accepted beyond doubt? The answer is where he was. He wasn't just in the vacuum. He was in a place where I don't know if all, but many Gdolei HaDor were there, and they saw who he was, and they accepted him as a real person. Okay, fine. Okay, we'll call it. We'll start.